this week on Behind the Lens.
Construction crews, under authority of the Mississippi River Commission President, Commander of the Mississippi Valley Division, and my authority as a New Orleans District Engineer, commence operations of the Bonnie Carey Spillway.
The Army Corps of Engineers opens the Bonnie Carey Spillway as the Mississippi River creeps toward flood stage in New Orleans. We'll have a briefing from the Corps and concerns about the impact of the opening on Lake Pontchartrain. Also, public anger at a hearing on a new chemical plant in St. James Parish. And New Orleans school operators try to get on the same page with their holiday schedules. I'm Tom Wright. You're listening to Behind the Lens, a podcast by The Lens.
Brought to you by community support. Learn more at support.thelensnola.org.
Governor John Bel Edwards has issued a state of emergency as high waters on the Mississippi River raise flood threats across the lower Mississippi Valley. Quoting the governor's statement here, rivers and waterways across the state have remained elevated for the past several months. The National Weather Service has issued a flood warning along the length of the Mississippi River. Many of those regions are already well above flood level, end quote. As we record the podcast Friday morning, the river is at 41 feet at Baton Rouge, where the flood stage is 35 feet. It's about 16.2 feet in New Orleans. Flood stage here is 17 feet. These rising waters prompted the opening this week of the Bonnie Carey Spillway at Norco. It's only the 13th such opening since the spillway was built in 1931, and the third in 4 years. Here's a briefing ahead of Wednesday's opening by Colonel Michael Clancy. He's the New Orleans District Commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
So the 1927 flood was one of the most destructive and powerful natural disasters in American history. In the aftermath of that event, Congress authorized the Mississippi River and tributary system. Bonnie Carey Spillway is one of the key components of that system, but it is a system. So we have been in flood fight since early November here in the lower Mississippi River. Since 2nd of November, we've had flood stages in the Mississippi River. There's a tremendous amount of rainfall. Since August, it's been the wettest year in 124 years in the Mississippi Valley. Just tremendous amount of rainfall for a long time. There is flooding in the Ohio Valley, the Cumberland Valley, the Tennessee Valley, the Mississippi Valley. Mississippi River drains 41% of the United States, drains 38, all or part of 38 states. All that water comes our way. This is a nationwide fight led by the Corps of Engineers in partnership with our state and local partners. In constant communications with our brothers up north, they were managing locks and dams, looking at the other spillways, particularly Burns Point, New Madrid, and the Morganza floodway, both of which, as we sit here today, are not going to need to be operated. But the first one of the spillways to get operated is typically the Bonnie Carey Spillway. So that's what we're going to do. Sitting right behind us is the Bonnie Carey Spillway, completed in 1931. This is going to be the 13th time we've had to operate it. So the spillway gets operated when we hit the trigger of 1.25 million cubic feet per second on the Mississippi. Don't want any more than that amount of water going south of us. By opening the spillway, we reduce flood risk on the lower Mississippi River, all points south of here, greater New Orleans area, multiple parishes. We reduce that flood risk by diverting all the water in excess of 1.25 million cubic feet per second into Lake Pontchartrain. Put it in perspective, 1.25 million cubic feet per second will fill up the Superdome in about a minute, minute and a half. Every minute, every hour, going to be 4 days. So it's a tremendous, tremendous amount of water. So today we're going to open approximately 30 bays to get to the right amount of flow. Every day we will adjust the flow. As the river rises, we will open more bays. As the river starts to fall, we will close bays to, again, to maintain that 1.25 million cubic feet per second flowing south of us, putting the rest in the Lake Pontchartrain. We are cognizant of the environmental impacts, taking the salt Lake Pontchartrain and turning it fresh. That has environmental impacts. We have a water quality monitoring program that we conduct in conjunction with other federal agencies and state agencies, as well as the state of Mississippi, to just monitor the impacts so we understand what those impacts are and help us better operate the structure. We only operate this structure as long as we need to and no longer than that. We're going to be open for at least a month, if I had to predict right now. Again, as I say, we will adjust every day, operate no longer than we need to, but best guesstimate right now is probably at least a month. We'll just see how that goes. As more rain falls in the valley, as spring snow melt happens, get more water, we may need to open longer. As I've already stated, we do not intend to operate the Morganza floodway. As we sit here today, we're going to get close to the triggers. We are not going to hit the triggers for Morganza, but a few rainfalls could change that. So we will be in constant communication with state and local officials. And if it looks like we're going to operate Morganza, we will absolutely let the public know as soon as we know that it's going to happen. But right now, it's not going to happen. I want to invite everybody to come out to the spillway. If you haven't seen it or you have seen it in past years, come on out. This is a public site. We'll have rangers here every day. Just ask you to do so safely. Obviously, don't go beyond this fence behind me. Don't try to go out on the structure itself. It's dangerous. If you're going to walk on the guide levee, please be careful. It's slippery. We've had injuries by members of the public falling and sliding down the levee. So just stay on the road. Ask everyone to stay away from the water, right? Don't try to get near the spillway, the structure, in a boat, canoe, kayak, anything like that. It's pretty fast current. You don't want to shoot those rapids. You have a several foot drop. It's incredibly dangerous, so be safe. Also ask everyone not to fly any drones over the structure, again, for public safety and for safety of the core workers. We will post drone footage that we take on our website. So everyone check out the New Orleans District Facebook site. We'll have a live camera. While the spillway is in operation, we'll put drone footage pictures there. So at the very least, you can check it out that way. But come on out anytime. Enjoy the spillway. Just do so safely.
A few hundred people came out Wednesday morning to watch the spillway opening. It was also greeted with some concern by conservation groups. Here's Christy Trail, Executive Director of the Lank Pontchartrain Basin Foundation.
So we're out here to monitor the effects of the opening. Obviously, the lake is a brackish system. Introducing this large volume of water from the river introduces a large volume of fresh water into our brackish system. So we want to monitor those effects.
Okay. What would those effects be as far as your analysis of this kind of operation? What happens when we're pouring these many gallons of relatively fresh water from the river into the lake?
So the lake is actually an estuary, being the brackish system with a lot of salt water coming in from the Gulf of Mexico and fresh water regularly introduced from the rivers from the North Shore. This, however, is an unusual operation for our estuary system to get a large rush of fresh water within a short period of time. What we're hearing is that the spillway is going to be open for about 30 days. That is a long time. So we're going to be monitoring the effects on our estuary, changes in salinity levels, be looking out for algae blooms and any changes we may see from the opening.
Okay. Tell me about the algae blooms. What's your concern there with the development of those that we might expect from this?
Well, we're not sure if we're going to see them or not, but that's one thing we're going to be looking for. We're asking for help from the community. If you see any algae blooms after the opening, to please let us know. We want to get out there and sample. You know, the spillway was open last year, and in fact, this is the first time ever that the spillway has opened in back-to-back years. So every year it changes, so we're going to see. Does that have an effect on the lake? Does it cause algae blooms? We're not sure yet, but it is something we're going to be looking for.
That there have been some observers who've remarked that with increased rain, as we might expect from climate change, a lot more water coming down river. So tell me about the impact you are concerned about with the lake in terms of increased rainfall and increased openings and spillway and river control systems like this.
You're right to say that it's happened more frequently, and we're not really sure why that's happening. It could be climate change, as you mentioned. It could just be manipulations in the river, changes in the river that it's doing on its own. But it is a fact that the spillway has opened quite a bit over the past several years. And so we really want to see what effect that does have on the lake. I can't say that we know that yet. This is going to be an interesting year because it is back-to-back years. But, you know, with it being open 30 days, that large volume of water, it does all flush out of the lake system within 4 to 6 months. So by the end of the summer, we do expect to see a return back to normal salinity levels in the lake.
Tell me about the health of the lake today. How is that as an ecosystem?
The lake is wonderfully healthy, and we're very proud of that. You know, the Lake Pontchartrain Basin Foundation takes full credit for cleaning up the lake. And it was declared clean in 2006. So since 2001, we have been out there monitoring the lake in 10 to 12 spots, kind of varies year to year, all around the perimeter of the lake. We collect for many parameters and publish those results on our website. And so since 2006, it's been wonderfully clean. We encourage people to get out there and enjoy the lake. And just, you know, check in with us. We're going to be monitoring this. We're going to be monitoring the effects of the spillway. We're going to be monitoring the effects on the rest of the lake, all around the perimeter, looking for all the changes, looking for algae blooms, looking for impacts to marine life. But all of that will be published on our website.
Another voice of concern was that of Kimberly Ryer. She is the executive director of the Coalition to Restore Coastal Louisiana.
I'm focused on how much sediment is moving past, because we've got this amazing river, the Big Muddy River, and it carries in it silt and sediment and the very stuff that built Louisiana. So the opening today is really important for flood control to make it safe for us to live here. But at the same time, we see all this sediment just flowing by. Each year, 100 million tons of sediment flows down the Mississippi. Most of it goes off the continental shelf. A lot of it goes into the lake when the spillways open. We need that sediment to do more. We need that sediment to rebuild our wetlands.
Remind folks what happens when the river is cut off from some of those lower parts of Louisiana.
So the wetlands that make up the bottom of our coast are fed naturally by water and by sediment. And they're naturally fed by the river, by the Mississippi River. For many years, we've managed the river to prevent flooding, to make it safe for us to live here. And that's worked out beautifully for people, for communities, for our economy.
Sure.
However, it's led to our wetlands starving. They're dying over time.
With a spillway control measure like this, is the sediment going in the right place?
Really, it isn't. We'd like that sediment to be going into our wetlands along the river, particularly downriver up here, instead of out into the lake and off the continental shelf. And we have plans to do that. That's what's very exciting here. The sediment that's going to flow past us today, in future years, we'll be busy, we'll be rebuilding our wetlands.
Tell me about, what are your views on coastal master plans focus on the mid-Barrack area and mid-Breton diversions?
So the coastal master plan is informed by the best science we have in terms of how our coast is changing. The coast is sinking, the water's coming up, and we need to put the river to work. The master plan focuses as its highest priority on river diversions, on letting water and sediment out of the river to build land, and we support that.
What's your response to concerns about those diversions impacting some of the estuaries where fishermen are making a living, for instance?
Status quo isn't an option. Our coast is changing. It's changing quickly. We need to control that change. We need to move quickly to protect our communities and use the river to help us build land. But keeping things exactly the way they are isn't an option for anyone.
That was Kimberly Ryer with the Coalition to Restore Coastal Louisiana. Before that, we spoke with Christy Trail with the Lake Pontchartrain Basin Foundation. A top official of China's Wanhua Chemical Group told St. James Parish Planning Commissioners Monday the company's proposed plant and convent will provide hundreds of new permanent and temporary jobs, be managed safely, and include a detailed emergency response plan and fully trained response teams. He also vowed to hire local workers and purchase local products as much as possible. But members of the public commenting Monday evening wanted no part of it. The plant would produce a chemical known as MDI. It's a type of isocyanate used in polyurethane production. Opponents of the plant came out in large numbers, part of a growing trend of pushback against new industrial development in the parish. One of them is Myrtle Felton. She's a resident of Convent, where the plant would be built.
In the past years, I've seen a lot of things happen here. Closing of churches, post office, schools, businesses, and parks, all to pave the way for industry. The cancer rate is very high. We do not need another chemical plant in this area. Why District 4? I have witnessed relatives dying of cancer. Husband and wife, one cannot help the other. I've lost, in 2014, I've lost many relatives, including my husband. It wasn't from cancer that he died, but he died from a broken heart watching his twin brother and his wife suffer with cancer. One can't help the other. You go check on them, one on the floor, the other one can't pick them up. That's not a pretty sight. It is very, very, very devastating. I don't know how many of you have ever witnessed somebody with cancer, how they suffer, but it is real. It is real, real, real. Before the chemical plants came, we had a very small number of cancer. Here today, everybody goes to the doctor, comes back with a sad report. There are so many people in just the Romville area where I live. I live maybe a mile from Nucor in my front door and Occidental in my back door. I can walk to both of them. How long do you think I'm gonna last there? How long? I love my kids. I love my grandkids. I would like to see them graduate from college. Will I be able to see it? Only God knows. Only God knows. We need help in that area. We can't go anymore. I can't grow flowers in my yard anymore like I used to. Do you have an answer for me? Is there an answer for me? Can someone help get me out of Convent? Out of the Romville area where I could go to my front window and watch Nucor? Go in my backyard and see the pollution coming from oxychemical?
Thank you, ma'am.
The plant appears on track to win substantial state tax benefits, as well as a $4.3 million state grant for infrastructure support. In education news, parents who have kids attending different schools may soon get some relief, as many New Orleans charters begin working together to coordinate their calendars. Marta Jusen reports.
In Orleans Parish, we have 86 schools, and there are some that are run by charter networks, others that are run solo by one charter board, and by my count, we have about 47 different calendars. So that's quite a lot to juggle if you, say, have a child in three different schools.
Right. Explain how this causes a problem for families.
Well, if you have children in multiple schools and those calendars don't quite overlap, you can see how that's going to create an issue with childcare. A lot of the holiday breaks don't necessarily line up. They might line up on the specific holiday, but not the days preceding or following the holiday.
More money out of pocket for daycare.
Right, or calls to family members. And then this is, you know, not to mention that schools are already starting and stopping at different times, because that's not unified either.
Okay, so that's the current system for the 2018-19 year. Now, how are these schools trying to unify and get on the same page?
Sure. So I think the schools would prefer that we use the term collaborate, because actually charters are given the ability to create their own calendars. That's within their purview. But they did, you know, recognize that this might be an issue for some parents. So they're trying to come together and find some common holidays.
Yeah. What would those holidays be?
They've identified they want to do Labor Day, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Mardi Gras. I think like I said before, what we're going to see the tricky part in is identifying, you know, do you do the week after Mardi Gras? Do you give the Friday off before? And, you know, how much are these calendars going to align? That's something that's left to be seen.
What might stand in the way of this collaborative planning?
Well, like we said with charter schools, they get to, you know, choose their own calendars. They also get to pick their own curriculum and staff, and they basically get to set up their entire program. And part of that planning and ability to set things up the way they like includes things like professional development days. Some schools like to do those full days off at the end of the week. Others like to take off every single Wednesday afternoon and talk about data.
Right, those are teachers but professionally developing in certain skills and knowledge sets, and the kids get the day off.
Exactly. And then the other thing is testing for high schoolers and elementary students happens at different times. So that is also going to potentially be a split there.
The days that they're talking about, you've listed in your article on the website.
Yep, everyone can check it out there.
Marta, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you appreciate this reporting by a nonprofit newsroom, we'd appreciate your support. Consider a donation today. Go to support.thelensnola.org. We close the podcast this week with some of the sounds of Carnival. Our friends at NewOrleansLocal.com recorded this in downtown New Orleans Wednesday night during the crew of Nick's Parade. We hope you'll have a safe and happy Mardi Gras. I'm Tom Wright. Thank you for getting behind the lens.